Today is the 4th of May, 2010. And true to Mercury being in retrograde motion, backward motion, my flight was canceled this morning. So let that be a lesson to us all. So hopefully it'll work out tomorrow. Just wanted to talk about that one verse that we chant at the beginning. Om Kayena Vacha Manasindraya Va Budyatmana Va Prakrite Sabhavat Karomi Yadyat Sakalam Varasmai Sri Govinda Yeti Samarpayami. So, in Sanskrit it means, I know there's a translation there, but I want you to appreciate it the way I do. Karomi yadyat. Yadyat means whatever. Whatever. Karomi means I will do. I do. Whatever I do or whatever I make. Whatever action.
Sorry, Sergio. Where exactly are we?
Oh, that's the prayer of offering.
Thank you.
Okay. And now I'm down the third line. Karomi yadyat. So it means whatever I do, right? And sakalam means completely, all, everything, fully. Okay? Samarpayami, the very last word. Arpayami means I offer or I give. Samarpayami, again, means completely, fully. I don't just give it, I give with my whole heart, you could translate. I give with my whole heart. I offer with my whole heart. Now, start at the top of the verse. Kaya, body. Kayena means with the body. Vacha is speech, with my words. Manasa, now it doesn't say this, it says manasendri. Manasindriyai, but it's actually manasa indriyai. Manasa means with my manas, my mind. Indriyai is plural, senses. Indriya would be one of your senses. Indriyai would be all of your senses. Five senses. Va means or. What I offer with my body, or my mind, or my senses. Buddhya, atmana. Those are two words. So what's the root of buddhya?
Buddha.
Buddha, bodhi. Intelligence. With my buddhi, my buddhya, my intelligence. Atmana means atma, my soul, my very self, my soul, my essence, my spirit. Prakrite, va again, or prakrite svabhavat. Prakrite means nature, prakriti, a particular nature. Svabhavat means my nature. Sva is the self. According to the nature of the self, I offer this completely. It's one of the most beautiful prayers I've ever come across in my lifetime. Because it's a prayer of complete surrender to God. And it's either I'm using all of these things or any one of them, you know, or better yet, all of them all the time. And this is how I offer it. And who do I offer it unto? Govinda. You can say Sri Govinda, or you can say Narayana. Narayana is Vishnu. Govinda is Vishnu. It's God in different forms. God in different manifestations is really just, it's God. But in Vedic understanding, God has 1,000 names. Why? Does he need 1,000 names? Because he does 1,000 different things. Because he's God. So therefore he has a name for all the different things. So these, and he has, in some cases, different forms that he takes to do different things. You will put on a different outfit or different kinds of clothes or kit or gear to go out and do certain things. Work in the garden, ride horses, teach school. So God doesn't just change his clothes, he changes bodies. You know, he says, well, let's see, this body's not really ideal for the job at hand. So I think I'll just slip on a different one. So there's one of the differences between us and God. You can change bodies too, but you kind of have to wait till your life ends. And you can start all over again, you know, if you want. So anyway, it was just a little, thought I'd share that with you. If you're about to have a baby, great. Because right now, just for the next couple of weeks, we have the sun exalted in the sky in Aries, according to Vedic calculation. We have, and the sun will be in Aries. Or if you have any friends or people you know, your neighbor or any loved ones you know who's about to deliver, the sun will be exalted until 14th of May. And Venus is in Taurus in the sky in its own sign as we speak. So you'd have an exalted sun, Venus in its own sign. So that means you're going to have a very talented individual. Exalted sun means very, very confident. Very self-assured. You know, this is a leader. You don't tell that child what to do. You make suggestions. Really. Seriously. So that's a natural leader. So if it's a girl, it'll be a queen. In one way, shape, or form. If it's a boy, it'll be a king. In one way, shape, or form. And the third thing we have, we just had Jupiter just moved into Pisces on the 2nd. Now Jupiter will be there for many, 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 many months. Venus will be in Taurus until only 15th of May, and Sun changes on the 14th. So we have, what is today? 4th. We've got 10 days. The next 10 days, you'd have Jupiter in its own sign in Pisces, which means high souls are coming in. We've discussed this before, recently. Compassionate souls. And Venus will be in its own sign and Sun will be exalted. So it's a very, very auspicious time. The more planets that are in their own sign or are exalted when someone is born, the higher the being, the higher the personality. That's how you tell how evolved the soul is. That's not the only way to tell astrologically, but that is one sure way to tell. When Ram, incarnation of Vishnu, was born, Ram and Sita, and Ram with he was the king or the prince, and he was an archer. And Ravan stole Sita, kidnapped her. And this is a theme you'll find in all throughout Asia, in all the stories. They all do that in all their art and their dance and puppetry and song. It's all the story of Ram, all throughout Asia. And Ram's chart, we have Ram's chart. So he had, do you remember now, he had the Cancer ascendant, with Moon in Cancer in its own sign on the ascendant, with exalted Jupiter in Cancer with the Moon. Then he had exalted Mars in the 7th house. He had exalted Sun in the 10th house. He had exalted Saturn in the 4th house.
That's why it took so long to get his home with kingdom. Was he exalted the Saturn in 4th?
He had exalted Venus in the 9th house. Then he had Mercury in the 11th house in Taurus. and I can't remember off the top of my head where Rahu and Ketu are. But you see.
Very noble.
Yeah. You know, and he was loved, and you know, he was like the essence of kingship and sovereignty and nobility and rulership on how to rule. The best form of government is enlightened leadership. If you can get it, it's the best form.
The Ramayana, we just see
This is Ramayana, yeah, that's what it is.
So how are we fixed with the, isn't the election this week?
In the UK?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, is there any enlightened leaders among the bunch there?
They've got a chance of getting someone then, don't they? That they'd take in, bring in someone like that?
No? Yeah, yeah. It would be, you would have a better chance, yeah. Because the election is taking place under the influence of an exalted sun, which is an excellent time, Jupiter in its own sign, Venus in its own sign. So they may actually get some good results, meaning that somebody coming into power may actually do some things.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good to see you. May actually do some things that will be of value. Because politicians will make every promise under the sun and then do very little. How are you, Nigel? Good to see you. So, yeah, it is a very good time to hold an election from that point of view. Exactly. Oh, not too much. Hi. How are you? Good to see you. Darlis, how are you? We were just talking about the exalted sun in the sky right now. Sun is in Aries, according to the Vedic calculation. Venus is in Taurus, in its own sign. And Jupiter is in Pisces now, in its own sign. So what we were speaking about, first of all, is that these three planets will be in this position for the next 10 days, which would be a wonderful time to give birth. If you're ready to give birth, or you know anybody who's ready to give birth, the next 10 days would be fabulous. Because we would really have a marvelous soul coming in. And coincidentally, Eilish is pointing out that the UK is having an election. This is an excellent time.
Well, they have the exalted sun, and they'll get a real proper leader.
That's what you would think.
And an enlightened leader.
Yeah. Meaning that the leadership, you know, I'm not going to say anything pro or con about who's ever, because we don't know yet who's going to be elected. But theoretically, because politicians oftentimes promise you the world and deliver a pea pod next to nothing. So you might get something, or you might. And we've talked about Jupiter being in Pisces for the coming year now, just moved on the 2nd of May. It's a time of tremendous enlightenment now for the coming year. And, I mean, the communion that one can have with the gods, one's ability to see things that you haven't seen, your ability to have insights, revelation, realization, epiphany is accelerated tremendously at this point in time for the coming year. And it would mean also we can go to a much greater place of compassion, a collective growth in compassion and enlightenment. I mean, we really could see a sweeping change if enough people were focused in the same way. You could turn the ship. You could actually turn the ship in the water, even though it's going this way. We can make it go this way if enough people meditated on it. Pisces is meditation. What's the symbol for Pisces?
Fish.
Fish, right. But what contains the fish?
The water.
The ocean. The ocean is the symbol for
consciousness.
Yeah. And yes, of course. Subconscious mind. So if you look at the ocean, all it looks flat, the same. It looks like really nothing's going on. It's just vast. But if you dive underneath it, there's a whole world of wonder going on underneath that you cannot see. So that's why it's the symbol for the unconscious, the collective unconscious, the personal unconscious, and transcendence, or what they call in Sanskrit, turiya. There's four states of consciousness. There's the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state, and turiya means fourth, transcendence, or samadhi, where you're actually in a conscious connection to the divine energy. The deep sleep state is absolutely essential, because that is like plugging your phone in at night before you go to bed. At least that's my habit. Because if you do not charge, it won't charge the battery, it won't work. Deep sleep state means the soul is here. We are all here as fish out of water. We don't belong here. We don't. How do we know this? Because we take birth, we die, we grow old, we suffer, we become diseased. Proof positive. So while the soul is in this temporary encasement, the material body, it has to be connected regularly to spirit. If you won't do this consciously by going into meditation or communing with God, which most people won't, then they must be plugged in forcefully. You knock them out. Sleep. Deep sleep is you being charged. It's the soul connecting to the transcendental source. But you're not conscious of it. But you can't live without it. Impossible.
But yogis
who meditate, or people who meditate regularly, and we're not confining it to one kind of meditation. It could be any kind of meditation. It could be a walking meditation. Those who meditate regularly need less
sleep.
This is a fact. It's a fact. And so now with Jupiter in Pisces, we should endeavor to increase our meditation this year, if possible. You know, it's a known fact in India, in Vedic culture, that there are certain high beings, pardon me, high souls, who live in caves or in Shangri-La type of places in the Himalayas that you and I would never find no matter what tourist map we had or GPS system, because you couldn't go there if you didn't belong. There are these souls who would be, some of them, hundreds of years old or older, very high beings, sages, and all they do is meditate, and they do penance and perform austerities and different kinds of practices, chant mantra, practice yoga. All of the meditation is focused on the welfare of the world. They don't meditate for themselves or for their own benefit. If we did not have these souls, whomever they may be, some of them are spoken about widely, you know, chances are the way we handle things, we'd be lucky to stay in orbit. Sincerely. So we have these souls. So if we would collectively contribute to this and meditate on the welfare of our world, then we'd have a much greater chance of turning things around And I'm just saying that this year is really a pivotal time right now in order to do that. So the more time spent, the better. Okay.
But the last time you said that after 22nd of May, the shift in...
2nd of May.
2nd, yeah.
Yeah, it just happened. Jupiter just moved.
Into Pisces.
Into Pisces, yeah.
Into Aquarius and Pisces.
Yeah. It's on sign. Okay. Anybody have any experiences they want to share with us? You guys missed my Mercury retrograde experience. I'm not here, by the way. I just appear to be here.
We just think you're here.
My flight left this morning. Well, actually, it didn't, because here I am. Because the volcano said, no, you can't go today. So that was my Mercury retrograde experience. So
where you are home?
I'm gone for 2 months. I'm leaving today for 2 months, but I'm here. So I'm leaving tomorrow for 2 months. I'm going to several places. Big long trip.
You're going to like LA or something?
I'm going to San Francisco and then to Portland, Oregon, and then to Perth, Australia, and then to Bali. And then back. Yeah, it's a long one. Okay. Anybody have any experiences? Coincidental experiences? Anything you want to share with us?
I was in Germany last weekend, and this is just like a bioresonance. And there were
bioresonance?
Yeah. And there were lots of people who are there, and then one of the guys was talking, he's German, he said that he's in Dr. Schussmann.
Yeah.
Right, and he was talking right away. He said that, again, he was talking like the way the world is going back to the way it used to be, like. And he said that some sages and rishi, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was doctor, but now he's very much into complementary thing, right? And he said that even he said E is equal to mc squared,
yeah.
Right? So the matter can be energy can be matter, all the quantum thing. But he said that that's why lots of rishis and our sages in India used to do meditate. And he said sometimes, you know, they just meditate there, like, and they're sitting there for maybe 5 years, 5 years, 10 years, or years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was talking to him. He said, yeah, that's funny. I always think that, what about the food? He said, Marcus, it's not about the food, like body yeah. Need food, right? He said, you have a physical body, astral body, mental body, and then the whole thing. We just can't see that, right? He said, people now can see about chakras where it wasn't existed. Physically, they're not existed, but they are. But now they found with machines and everything.
Yeah.
They have existence. So they like the vibration of these things. They are like, you know, the vibration of higher being. They are actually, they don't need any stuff.
No.
The body is enriched. They don't need any food to keep their body.
Well, you can live, you know, we live on food. Yeah. If you live on animals, you're living on very dense food. Because you're, no offense, but you're living on carcass. And that's, you know, in effect, decaying matter. So if you raise that vibration a little bit, then you eliminate the flesh part, and you're living on grains and vegetables and fruits. So that raises the vibration. You can find all kinds of stories about yogis who live on leaves or roots, fruits, leaves, just leaves.
Also Shilajit as well.
Shilajit.
Stuff they got from you, Marcus.
Yeah.
Stuff that comes out from the rocks and the Himalayas. It's full of minerals.
Minerals. Yeah. Exactly. So it depends. You can live on air. You can live on prana. You can live on light. So it just depends what level you're on. Now, you know, if you're living on light, I think intense physical exercise is not really recommended. But
they do that in the morning, isn't it? And then create some sort of slick on the top of their mouth and they shove off that.
Hmm.
I think that's how they do it.
Yeah. So, you know, there's many ways to live. And these things have been around for thousands of years.
I actually seen this, it's called an Indian, because I have an Indian channel there, and they're showing a special documentary about some yogis, and they are sitting in like nearly very little clothes, like, you know, and nearly naked, and then they are sitting in snow, right? And they see they're like, you know, when they're doing sort of meditation called Chun, something like called. Some meditation is named, and they're actually sweating, and there's temperature maybe like a minus 10, something like, and they're sweating, and it's a race there, like, they're not actually doing an exercise, but sitting there and meditating, they're actually sweating, the control, and they just walk around and then have no clothes and no shoes on, and they're fine. Amazing.
Anybody else? Okay, I thought we'd talk a little bit about karma, jnana, karma yoga, jnana yoga. So karma is
action,
work. But karma at its fundamental level, everybody must act. Nobody can do nothing. To subsist in this world, we must act. The vast majority, notwithstanding a few of these sages we're talking about here, most of us must act and do something. So karma means action. But karma on this level generates reaction. So action and reaction. Whenever we do our actions motivated by ego or self alone, with the intention of producing a certain effect or reaction, then the motivation is karmic in nature. It produces a reaction. It could be good. It could be bad. It could be middling. Something in between. And as long as we are producing reactions, be they good or bad, we continue to come back and take births in order that we may enjoy and suffer those reactions. So that is what happens to the vast majority of us, 95%+. Or maybe higher than that. We just remain on that wheel of samsara, repeated birth and death, and experiencing those karmas. And those karmas are also generating desires. Oh, yeah, but wait, I haven't done that yet. Okay, no problem. You come and do that if you like. I'll give you a body that's suitable for that. Whatever your desire might be. If you have one desire at the point of death, boom, you're back. So you can have an opportunity to fulfill that desire. So that's karma. Action and reaction. Then jnana means what?
Knowledge.
Jnana is knowledge. Now, jnana can generate reaction as well, but jnana, I'm just going to differentiate kind of like work being more physical. Jnana, knowledge, is more mental. A person who is in a higher state of development will be more in the brain with the work that they do. or they'll be solving problems. They'll be thinking about, they won't be using the physical body as much. They'll be using the brain. So we may have scientists. We may have composers. We may have writers. We may have philosophers, great thinkers, whatever it might be, teachers, artists, people who pursue a path of knowledge. This is jnana. But again, if it's done for the benefit of self or an expression of the ego, without making a spiritual connection, is the same thing I'm saying about the karma, then it too shall create a reaction. Even though, let's say you invent, I don't know, you come up with a cure for cancer. So then you, or some disease that they don't have a cure for, you come up with something. And of course you'll be celebrated for that and recognized. And if it saves a lot of lives, that will generate excellent karma for you. But then you must come back to enjoy that karma, the results of that. But this is produced, it is karma, it's work, but I'm saying produced mostly through the brain, through jnana. So now, what is the difference between karma and karma yoga? So if we move into yoga, if we see what an ordinary person does, and we see who's doing karma, work, activity, and we see what a karma yogi does, a person who is making yoga a connection, a spiritual connection, and is practicing a type of yoga, but and whatever it is they may be doing, what's the difference as we see them in their work? There oftentimes is no visible difference. You can't tell. Both of them may be doing the same work. They could be a UPS delivery person. They could be a farmer looking after cows. They could be a businessman selling telephones. They could be anything. What's the difference? The karma yogi is not working for the result. He has let go of the result. Not an easy thing to do. He works, but he works out of a sense of duty. And he offers that as an offering to spirit, to God. So he works from the position of soul or self and not from the position of ego. He's motivated by dharma, not by karma. That's the difference. So you could be doing whatever it is you do right now, and how do we tell if you're a person who's doing karma or if you're a person who's doing karma yoga? It's only your state of consciousness that changes it.
Would be your intent.
Your intent. That's what makes the difference. Now, by looking at you, we may not see the difference, but that's what it is. It's doing your dharma, your duty, but doing it for the sake of that dharma, for the sake of that duty, and drawing upon your natural God-given gifts, and not being attached to the result, and to do it for the pleasure of, you know, to be aligned with spirit. But we can take it a step further. Well, I'll get to that. A jnana yogi is somebody who wants to expand knowledge, but knowledge that will not cause bondage, but knowledge that will bring liberation, freedom, that will liberate the soul. So that's really the difference, what we're talking about here. If you do actions that bind you to the material world, then you are doing karma. If you perform actions that liberate you or free you from repeated birth and death, then you are performing karma yoga. So it depends. So the same thing with the jnana. Jnanis are people who try to understand God or the absolute truth or spirit by using an intellectual process or an intellectual method, a method of knowledge, and or a speculative method. So God can be understood by using the brain, at least to some extent. So in other words, they use their brains to meditate on higher knowledge and truth, just like we're using our brains at the moment. That's what we're talking about. So if you used your brain to get a PhD in a certain subject, then you might get a PhD, but that would be a karmic endeavor.
I've been a doctor.
Yeah, like being a doctor. Yeah.
But if you're becoming
a doctor out of, and your intent is
your altruistic sort of.
Yeah.
Your intent is good.
Doctor's intent is normally good. Mm. Is normally good.
You don't need to be a jnani to someone that's active from their heart, really. They have to learn the knowledge, but
does it bind them or does it free them? See, if you're somebody who becomes a doctor and you want to save the world, this is a good thing, obviously not a bad thing. But if you're invested in it from an ego point of view, it binds you. That's simply the point. If you're a jnani and you're expanding your understanding from the point of view of soul or spirit, it will not bind you. It can liberate you. Okay? So karma, karma yoga, jnana, jnana yoga. I was up half the night talking on the phone, arranging flights, so my brain's not as smooth as it sometimes is. Okay. Now, let's go to the next level. Bhakti. Bhakti is devotion. So, bhakti yoga. Well, why is this different? Well, first of all, here in the material world, what is the thing that is really considered to be the highest taste, the highest experience, the highest pleasure, or the single most sought after experience? One word. Love. Isn't it? Give me something that's beyond love. Let me hear it. It's love. Now, I didn't say it has to be conjugal love. Love. We want love. We want loving experiences. We want loving exchanges. With who? With everybody. If we can, with absolutely everybody. Don't you? I want a pleasant exchange from the guy at the spa. I call him by his name. I make a couple of jokes with him. He laughs. I laugh. I buy a newspaper. We're all happy. Now, it's not a life-changing love, but it's a kind of love. You know, we want this. We want these experiences. So love's the highest. So we talk about doing karma actions. We talk about fostering knowledge. But where's the love? So if we can invest our hearts in our activities and in our development of knowledge, in other words, if we can enter into relationship with God, with Spirit, into a reciprocal relationship. Most people, when they think of having a relationship with God, it is a one-way street, my friend. It goes one way. Man proposes, God disposes. Dear God, let me tell you what I need today. You don't even ask him, how's it going?
It's an airplane.
You know, I need a flight out. You know, dear God, what can I do for you? What might you like?
Our gratitude.
Gratitude is part of it. Mm. Gratitude is a part of it. So here in the material world, the greatest reward, and you can argue this one if you like, no problem, is that exchange that you have with somebody, a loving exchange. And it can be in friendship. It can be between a parent and a child. It can be between co-workers or your colleague. It can be with anybody. You know, with your lover, with your wife, with your husband, with your brother, your sister. These are all these different kinds of relationships. In the spiritual world, they are also available, according to Vedic understanding. They sometimes explain that they use the metaphor of a banyan tree standing on the riverbank. That banyan tree is the spiritual realm in all its various branches and leaves, and the figs are the fruit of the banyan. And these are all the different experiences and realms and levels of spiritual realities. And that's the real world. If we look, if we stand on the bank and we look into the water, what do we see? We see the reflection of the banyan tree. Right? That's the material world. It is a reflection of the spiritual world. So all the things that go on in the material world go on in the spiritual world. But without the ego part, without the binding action, without the karmic retribution, without the karmic reward, without the duality, good, bad, you know, ugly, beautiful, black, white, sweet, sour. So, all this is a reflection. It's not like there are different philosophies that say nirvana is the highest circumstance, which means the absence of all this. Wipe all this out. And now we're in a state of nirvana. No creation. Non-existence. There's a great poster of all the levels of creation. All the material and spiritual levels are on that poster. If you want a meditation. So, we can have the same type of relationship with God. Now, I don't want to freak you out or scare you away by saying that. And I don't want to pigeonhole you and say it must be like this or this or that, or God's an old guy with a white beard and he's angry half the time. No. So God can manifest in any way, shape, or form. There are certain forms and shapes that different philosophies will tell you how God has manifested down through the ages. You know, well, pick one you like. I invite you. Pick one you like. Or conceive of a different one. I mean, anything's possible for God. He's got 1,000 names. So, we were just saying before you came here that, when we take on different, we put on different clothes to do different jobs. And if we're going to go horseback riding, if we're going to work in the garden, if we're going to teach a class, we wear different clothes. But God just puts on a different body. He doesn't mess with the clothes. He just changes bodies and gets the right body for the job, and off he goes. So, God is not limited in the concept of forms, nor limited in the concept of how we can reciprocate. So this higher state is bhakti yoga, where we link with God out of love and devotion. What is the greater motivator? How many of us do things every day, and the results or the fruits of that labor go to those we love, directly or indirectly? How many of us do it? We all do. It's more like, who doesn't do it? We all do it. And sometimes we do it reluctantly. It's nicer if we do it happily, when with an open heart. Sometimes we do it just out of guilt. That's not exactly the loving relationship we're trying to nail down here. But the more you are in love, or in a state of love with God, then the more motivated you are, or with anyone, the more motivated you are to make that person happy and to reciprocate. Reciprocate means give and take. It's not that.
It's a bit like sort of seeing the divine within another, within creation, within a human.
Of course. Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a kind of a delight in that.
Yeah. Mm. Exactly. But we can see God on. There's three levels. How do I always say that? I haven't talked about it.
Give me the first one.
Energy, energetic. Can't think of it right now. Yeah, that's it. Unity, diversity, and personality. Isn't that it? Yeah. There's three levels of God realization. Unity, diversity, and personality, according to Vedic understanding. Vadanti tat tattva viras tattvam yaj jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. If you merge into the energy of the oneness, the effulgence or beautiful light, that is the basis of everything. All creation rests on this divine light, Brahman. Christians like to call it the Holy Ghost. That is a realization of God in unity, where everything is one in union. We are all part of that one indivisible energy. The next level of realization is diversity, which is what you are talking about, which is the ability to see God in everything and everybody. So it's God is manifested in diverse forms, not just an energy or a uniform energetic light. That's the first one. Next one is in all these different beings. And that's why, of course, you know, we do this. We bow, namaste, namaskar. Because that recognizes the divinity in everybody. That's the whole idea. That's what that is. And then the third level is personality. Personality is where you enter into a relationship, a personal relationship, a reciprocation with the source of the unity, the source behind the diversity. You might I don't know, you may have a favorite popular band or group or artist, and you really, really like this artist, you know, say a musical artist, and whenever you see information about this person, you know, you gobble it up, you read it, and you look at the photos, and, oh, I wonder what they're doing now. So that's one level. The next level, you put on the music. Well, that's even more intimate, isn't it? Now you're hearing the voice and the songs you love, and maybe they're hits, or maybe they were hits 300 years ago, whatever. You know. But then, what if you go, what's the next highest thing from that? You get to meet the person. You get to meet your hero. What would be even better than that? You become his friend. Yeah? And you have a relationship. And you hang out together. You see? So, like this. We were talking about Katie Holmes, the actress. When she was a kid, on her bedroom wall, she had a huge poster of Tom Cruise, the actor. And she meditated on that poster. And she said, one day I'm going to marry him. And you know what? She did. She's married to him. Now, there's a girl who can manifest. So that is it. Yeah, you know, there is the full frontal example of that point. Now she's in the most intimate reciprocal relationship with him. So this can be done on the spiritual plane as well. That is bhakti. That is devotion. So don't just do it because it frees you from karma, karmic reaction, repeated birth and death. Do it for duty, then do it for love, for pleasing God, Spirit. Then they talk about samadhi. Samadhi can be achieved on any of these levels. Samadhi means to be fully absorbed in transcendence. That's samadhi. When this world, even though you're sitting in it, it doesn't really exist. You're in the spiritual realm all the time. But there's something beyond samadhi. And that's prema. Prema is pure, unconditional love for God. It's better than samadhi. Why? Because samadhi is static. Prema is dynamic. When you read about Radha and Krishna, the two in the middle, Krishna, who's God, wanted to see what it was like to hang out with God. Pretty hard to do when you're stuck in your own body. There's no objectivity. It's too subjective. So he manifested himself as his polar opposite. The divine masculine becomes the divine feminine. And the feminine is the pleasure potency, according to spiritual yoga philosophy. The spirit, the pleasure potency is feminine by nature. So that's Radha. And Radha experiences what it's like to hang out with Krishna. And Krishna experiences Radha. And how they do it is, they keep blowing each other's minds. So their relationship is so dynamic that Krishna does something for Radha. Maybe he plays on the flute. She goes... She swoons. I've never heard that song before. Where did you get that from? I just made it up. And then she sings. And he goes, what a voice here. And so they go. And they keep taking each other to a level beyond and beyond and beyond, to levels they've never been to before. There's no limit. It's the spiritual realm. There's no limit. Here, there's a limit. How many pints of Guinness can you drink? Only so many. When you go to a concert, how many hours can you listen to this one band? Only so many. When you're making love to your loved one, how long can you go? Only so long. My point is, when you're eating your favorite food, how much can you eat? Only so much. Only so much. We have a dachshund in there who thinks he can eat as much as... Here we are limited by the law of satiation. We become sated or satiated. No more, please. Thank you. No matter how great it is, you know, this is your favorite dish. I made you this apple pie. You love it. No more. I had 3 pieces. That's enough. In the spiritual world, there is no law of satiation. And there's no negative reaction.
True, is that tied into the limitations of time and space here?
Correct. Okay. Exactly.
So in other words, the idea there is that there's no... It's endless.
It's endless. It's endless because it's infinite. This is finite. That's infinite. Yeah. It's eternal. This is eternal. Yeah. That's eternal.
Is it I met this lad, he worked in the spa, and I ran into it in a newspaper, and every time I go in, he'd have a smile, and there's just something about his eyes. He's an absolutely beautiful soul, I thought, and I just got to know him. He was over here at the Venus, but I made a long story short, he's ridden me quite a lot, but I felt every time he spoke, he was much younger than me, about 20 years younger than me, very, very young. He seems to have like a very old soul, and every time he spoke, I just felt this beautiful love. It was absolutely, not a sexual thing at all, but it just, every time he spoke, there was this connection. And it was just something, like you say, just really beautiful.
Well, that's an example of the reciprocation. But in the spiritual world, it goes on and on and on to yet another level. So that's why I'm saying that's how it works with Radha and Krishna. Radha and Krishna are the essential example of a loving reciprocal exchange. So I invite you to experience this in your own lives through your meditation. You can meditate on God, your concept of God, your concept of spirit. If you prefer unity, if you like diversity, do whatever you are most inclined to. But I recommend going to the highest state, at least giving it a try. Many people know about yoga philosophy, but they don't know about these other levels. They think that the highest level is always merging into oneness and losing your identity. That's only one level. So, I invite you to taste Suprema, divine love. And Jupiter being in Pisces now, it's it's an excellent time. Jupiter is, as I mentioned in that article, Pisces is the final sign of the zodiac. So, if Jupiter has transited the 12 signs of the zodiac, this is just the completion of the cycle. And then it starts again. Next sign, Aries, back to the beginning. So this year, how much of a pivotal year is this? Where Jupiter completes a 12-year cycle. So, you know, what as I said in the article, what do we have to show for it? What have we learned? How far have we come in the past 12 years? Well, judging by what just went down in 2009, it's not all that encouraging. You know, rampant materialism to the point where the well-being of the populace has been sabotaged by people just desperately trying to make a profit and not thinking of the long-term benefits, which is the duty of the leaders, is to protect the welfare and the well-being of the people and act with that in mind. So, you got another year yet here, we might be able to... And now, you know, so many people are being asked to make sacrifices and, you know, have their wages reduced because of this out-of-control profiteering. And we're supposed to come in, clean it all up, and bite the bullet. So, be good if we could... lift our consciousness out of that.
Do you have anything to say on the wine calendar? You know, the 2012?
No, yeah, I could say something on it in a minute.
Yeah.
One of the things we have to be careful of, and I know I myself am guilty of it, is pointing the finger too much. There's a lot of that going on right now. You know, well, your fault, you did this, and the developers did that, and the politicians did that, and so on and so. That won't lift us out of it, though. That'll keep us in it. It'll just be, you know, you're to blame or you're to blame, and I'm having to pay the price, and now my life is, I'm suffering because, you know, that's true. I'm not denying it. But it won't lift us out of it. We need to lift ourselves out of it. We need to raise ourselves to a new paradigm. And if we don't do that ourselves as individuals, how do we expect that we're going to create that for ourselves as a collective? You know, we're the ones that are creating our leaders on some level. So, before I went off in one of my tangents, back to Pisces. Pisces is the time to dive into the ocean of the subconscious, of transcendence, and create the new reality. This is an ideal time. It's a wonderful, wonderful time to travel. The best. To foreign countries. To holy places. To tirthas. To sacred spots. To power spots. If you can, in the next year, between now and the 8th of May, 2011, take a trip or two or three to some sacred place that's sacred to you for the purpose of transformation and enlightenment and for making an offering. This is the time. What we impregnate Brahman, creative energy, divine creative substance with, in this year, what we sow, the seeds we sow into that creative divine substance, have a much, much better chance of taking root and bearing fruit in this year. Because the cycle begins next year, Jupiter back in Aries. It's the new cycle, but this is a 12-year cycle. Okay. Questions? Comments? We're not going to make it too late tonight because...
Can I mention my meditation?
You can. Yeah, please.
Since I was a kid, I always had this dream that I had maybe once a week. And I didn't know what it was. It was almost like a jump out of my body and then this one guitar string. And I'd call it the one guitar string dream. And I never knew what to do with it. And after I met Drew, I found out that it's... Brahma Sutra.
Brahma Sutra.
Thread. That,
a sutra is a thread or a string. Brahma means spirit.
Anyway, I was meditating the other day and it appeared in front of me and I hadn't thought about it for a while. And they were telling me that it's very important to make sure that this guitar string, and I'd say it, which they said goes through everyone.
Vertically.
Yeah, it's vibrating.
Bum.
And then during the same meditation, and they said, and then in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that that all things rest upon Krishna like pearls on a thread.
That's exactly what he says. He says, everything rests upon me as pearls are strung upon a thread. Sutre mani gana eva.
So the meditation, they told me to use the meditation of seeing yourself as one of the pearls on Krishna's necklace.
On God's necklace.
You're one of the pearls. And not to forget that you're one of the pearls, just to make sure you're connected.
I remember when Marcus Shmika was here and he was talking about overtones. He was talking about the sutra. So you pluck the string, like on a guitar, and it begins to vibrate. And then it creates a series of overtones in threes. 3, 6, 9, 12.
And where they overlap, that's where matter compresses. That's how you create stuff is with the overlaps.
Yeah, overtones. So you've got like ones and zeros, you know? On and off switch. So you've got matter, spirit, matter, spirit, matter, spirit, matter, spirit. Or if you like, density, space, density, space, density, space. And it, according to how the string is vibrating. When you build a building, according to Vastu principles, and you plan to build it in one of these space areas, you won't get planning permission for it. Or it won't happen, or there'll be problems, or they'll build it and they'll tear it down, is what they're doing now. Because you can't build in space. You can only build in matter where density can be supported. So that's how this works in the universe. Bang. So it's, if you can meditate on that on so many different levels, that's how it works. And the law of musical harmonics proves it. When you pluck a guitar string, it plays a note. But when you lightly touch it with your left hand and pluck it, it plays an overtone. Right?
It
bypasses the basic note and plays an overtone, which is how many up?
It's an octave and there's a whole series of bases.
Yeah, there's an octave above and then it subdivides itself.
Yeah, subdivides and you subdivide. Yeah.
That's a fact. That's a universal principle. It's a numerical principle. It's a creative principle. principle.
Pluck your string.
So pluck your string. Vibrate your string.
They're at the same time. They're absolutely there at the same time. If you play the piano, for example,
yeah,
you can hear them when you're playing your fundamental notes. You can hear them inside. And if you stop the notes, you know more about this than me. If you stop the notes in a certain way, the ringing that goes on is often the overtones.
Yeah.
I can't notice it if I ever tootle on a keyboard, electronic keyboard, which is just purely electronic generated, and then I go to a real piano. Yeah. You're just hit by this wall of extra sounds that you're missing from the other thing, you know?
Yeah, ambient sound.
Yeah, and it's just the most, but it's the fact that they're all there, and they're all lighter, aren't they? The higher you go, the weaker.
I just had my piano tuned during the month, so when it was out of tune, obviously the overtones aren't exactly in
sync. No.
And the moment it's tuned perfectly, it's like sparkles.
Yeah, it's music.
Everything is.
It's music to your ears.
Yeah.
I mean, which is also an argument for natural instruments over electric instruments.
Acoustic instruments.
Instruments.
Actually, when I did the meditation, I was meditating on our big version of that tree yantra out there.
Our friend Mary Reynolds.
We went to the thing the other night. The next day.
You know, we have in the dining room that the painting of the two yantras. Mary Reynolds did that painting. So she's now, these are her paintings, and she's turned them into cards, and she's selling them. So I said we would show them to you. And her website is on the back of each of these cards. If you're interested, you can order these cards from her. She's wonderful. She's the queen of the mandala, that one. Queen of chakra. Okay, so we'll do some meditation, then we'll call in an evening. We have to be up and at the airport fairly early tomorrow. We'll have a cup of tea. I don't want to throw you out. I don't want to be, I'm not trying to be rude, so forgive me.
Some hot tea, bud?
No.
What time is your flight to?
9:50. But we leave here at 6. I mean 7. All right. Close your eyes. Breathe. Relax. And let go. Deeply, deeply relax, breathe, and let go. Allow the stress, the tension, the fear, the apprehension, to drain from your body. Totally, completely. Relax. Breathe. And let go. All right. You're in a beautiful, beautiful place. Maybe it's indoors, maybe it's outdoors. But it is very still, very quiet, very peaceful. Not a sound. Envision yourself standing with your arms to your sides, like a stick, straight up and down. But you're not on the ground, you're in the air, above, in space perhaps. now envision the sutra, the string that comes from some infinite place high, high above you and is enters through the top of your head and travels down your sushumna, the middle of your spine, and out the base of your spine, down through between your legs and between your feet, and off into infinity below. This is you, strung on your thread. Feel the thread. Feel it holding you. Feel the lightness of your being. And now, vibrate, not you, yourself. Don't do anything with your hands. But feel yourself being plucked or vibrated one time. And you begin to vibrate with the movement of the thread. What happens? What is the sensation? What happens next? Are you plucked again? Let it unfold. Let it develop for you. Continue until you feel complete, and when you're done, you can open your eyes, returning to consciousness, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. Anybody want to share their experience?
Just how everything was vibrating and the symphony that was going on within, yeah, in this meditation, but also that the harmony then that was going on, that so the vibration throughout the whole of the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's a lovely meditation.
Yeah, one of the seminars, the minute you put into motion, suddenly you knew everything. Suddenly you had all the answers, and suddenly none of the other stuff really mattered. Nothing really mattered. It was amazing. Suddenly you got it. You were kind of completely different to being stationary. For me, anyway.
is you're vibrating in harmony.
Yeah, in the other case, you're kind of just standing there experiencing what's going on around you and trying to make sense of it as we do. In the other case, you are suddenly now part of it all. You're kind of in the know.
Mm.
You're in the scene, you're in the shake, and totally different experience. Yeah, interesting.
It's a good one, huh? Anybody else?
My one starts to get bigger. One where it was like, my starts to get bigger. And it was like, boom, boom, like this.
And you grew in size?
Yeah. But it went to such a point that it couldn't help but affect all the other people, things. So eventually it had a ripple effect all the way on.
Oh, that's why they call them sympathetic strings on the sitar.
That's right.
Sympathetic vibrations.
To the bigger I got, it automatically had an effect.
So the bigger the effect that you have,
the bigger effect,
the greater effect it has on everyone else. Fantastic. And more? That's good. It's plenty.
Maybe that might be the you know, one way of doing the Jupiter and Pisces thing.
Yeah.
To help activate everyone else.
Yeah. If everyone else is a string and they need to be brought into motion, into vibration, and subsequently into harmony, and we're getting all, well, I guess we're limitless in how many strings we can have, all the other beings being played in harmony with us. It's a nice meditation.
And also another thing is, I do always hear something, not exactly like that, like the little boxer, but something similar.
Tambora.
And the more that we're vibrating, the more excited it became, or higher pitched, or but not horrible higher pitched, just almost like a girl singing with a great voice.
It probably raised the frequency of the vibration.
It started like all the way up.
It raised the vibrational frequency. You know, it's kind of like you only hear from here to here. Right? Anything below that, you don't hear. Anything above that, you don't hear. So you're going beyond and beyond. Expanding the frequency. Mark and Day, he's still fully in it.
He's just really enjoying that. Okay.
Anyone else?
Most physical feeling for a meditation I've had before, because I could actually feel the vibration, and I actually felt a little nauseous with the intensity.
Yeah, well, that's what it does. It makes it almost feel like you've been thrown out of your body.
Sickness.
And that's why I'd hated when I was a kid, because I didn't know what to do with the strain.
Yeah. That's just how powerful it was.
Well, then you just need to get used to it and maybe not vibrate it too forcefully to begin with until you're used to it. You know, you don't want motion sickness. Okay, next, what is the first Tuesday in June? The first Tuesday in June, we will have meditation night here. Kalindi has done extensive work with the time waver, the quantum healing modality machine. And I won't be here, but matters not. Kalindi is going to introduce you to the time waver in some detail. She'll put you into the time waver and work on, do some analysis of you. Mind you, be in front of everybody, so you know that. You can either go in do that in front of people or not. You don't have to, but you're welcome to. And she'll show you how the analysis is done and what needs to be worked on and set up the various, use the different databases, among them homeopathics, frequency vibrations, yantras, mantras, so many different things, light energy, gems, it's all in there. And you'll see how it works and put you in there and optimize you. The machine analyzes and optimizes. And we've had remarkable results with it, including getting rid of cancers for people. So that will be next Tuesday, first Tuesday in June. Right here. It's the 1st of June?
Yeah. It's not a bank holiday. It's the Monday
of... Oh, it's
a
Tuesday.
Not
okay. Thank you. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna.